Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:04 on March 23rd. Members present are Representative Gatto, Representative Newman, Representative Gardner, Representative Booth, and myself, Representative Olson, chair today, or I guess chair for the next year and a half.
Come to think of it.
We got two bills today, House Bill 170, an insurance bill, and House Bill 162 on mortgage lending. First bill up will be House Bill 170. We're not taking any testimony today. It's going to be the original overview from Linda, and anybody that's online is listen only. But please join us, Ms. Hall, or Linda. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Linda Hall, Director of the Division of Insurance, and I would like to do my preliminary discussion, maybe my only discussion, of House Bill 170. Labor and Commerce Committee has graciously agreed to sponsor this bill at my request. The majority of the bill is found in sections 1, 2, and 3, which deals with solvency oversight. I will try to make this as untechnical as I can in my testimony, but I do realize that when we're dealing with financial regulation, there it can be somewhat daunting. The general purpose of this part of the bill is to provide authorization to adopt and regulation the financial reporting model regulations of the NAIC. It's the intent of the division with this authorization to adopt the entire annual financial reporting model, but the model is too long to put all of it in statute. The model regulation has been in place for several years and has had some revisions in 2006. The original regulation and the revisions have been fully adopted by the NAIC. The basic model regulation is an accreditation standard, and I would like just for a minute to talk about accreditation. The Division of Insurance is accredited by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. This is a mechanism to review each individual state's financial examinations of the insurance companies for which they are the primary regulators. States rely on each other for the quality of their financial reviews, their financial oversight, and the accreditation process is to ensure that the states are doing an adequate job of that financial review. In August of this year, the Alaska Division will undergo their accreditation review. A team of three financial examiners come in and review our financial exams, the work that my financial examiners have done, and look at those for the quality of those reviews and determine whether or not we retain our accreditation. I think it's an important piece that you understand the way in which we're regarded, that our financial exams are taken to be good and they're accepted by other states. Sections 1 and 2 of the bill deal with annual audited financial reports. The first part deals with an annual audit and related requirements that are currently required, but they're not in statute. The statute that's referenced in this section, 2109-200, has a statement requirement, and we're trying to codify that so because it's going away in the statement instructions. So we're really not changing anything there. Insurance companies have to have an annual audit. It has to be done by CPA. It has to report significant deficiencies in internal controls and misstatements of financial condition or noncompliance with capital and surplus. This bill codifies those same things. It does allow the director to require a report describing internal control over financial controls. We need to be sure that there are adequate internal controls in place. Bill requires the insurer to have an audit committee, requires a CPA to forward a report of misstatement of financial condition or noncompliance with capital and surplus requirements if the insurer does not give that to us. It also, in Section 7 related to this, prohibits the making of materially false or misleading statements to an accountant. So we want to make sure that The companies that we regulate make accurate statements, and there's statutory basis to do that. Basically, this annual report requirement provides an annual review of the financial reports and reporting of seriously poor internal controls. The audit committee is a factor we feel in good corporate management, and the detailed rules will be done in keeping with the NAIC annual financial reporting model reg. We're not intending to adopt something out of the norm. These are model regulations that will be adopted in all of the states. Moving on, Section 3 is an updated requirement for entities with their custodial agreements. Part of our statute has a number of restrictions on where insurance companies can keep money. This is a restatement of that section, specifies that such entities may only be banks, trust companies, security firms, or clearing corporations. And it requires that custodial agreements be in writing, properly authorized by the insurer, and comply with the requirements that we have in regulation. There are times when we do a financial examination, the examiners find that the custodial agreements between an insurer and their bank in particular may not meet our requirements. We require an indemnity agreement that the bank sign. Some banks are reluctant to take that responsibility. But we want to be sure that there is no misuse of money or dishonest behavior in the custodian of that money. Part of the financial oversight is being sure when a claim is filed, there's money there to pay it. So we also have restrictions on who can have the money and the kind of written authority that's there. The other sections of the bill deal with two what I call clarifications. Sections 4, 5, and 6 all deal with the surplus lines arena, and I think most of you at some time or another have heard me talk about surplus lines. This is a much less highly regulated area of insurance. We have oversight, but it's done differently. These are, as I said, clarifications. Section 4 merely replaces the word directive with the term order. We issue orders. That is our actual process. Directive is not a term typically used by the division, except in this particular statute. There's no definition of directive in statute. So we have requirements for orders. Those are already in statute, so we want to make sure that this section says what we actually do. Section 5 removes a requirement that monthly surplus lines broker reports be notarized. We found that's not necessary. We're also moving toward electronic filing, and it would be very difficult to notarize electronic filings. Section 6 merely changes the definition of wet marine and transportation insurance. Right now, there are four things listed there, and it's more of an and. Each of those are separate kinds of wet marine or transportation insurance. We want that to be clear. Section 7, I already referenced. It just says you can't say misleading or false statements about your financial condition to your accountant. Sections 8 and 9 deal with the Alaska Life and Health Guarantee Association. Clarifies that a member is an insurer who has authority to issue policies. You don't necessarily have to have written a policy to help pay for the administrative cost of the Guarantee Association. It will not change how assessments are made. There are two kinds of assessments. One are administrative assessments, and those are a maximum of $250. That is the type of assessment that we think all insurers who are authorized to write here should pay. The second class B assessments are insolvency assessments. If you don't write policies, you don't pay those assessments because they're based on premium writings. And that, in effect, is my overview of the bill. I would be happy to entertain any questions.
Well, one right off the bat is I notice a face from the past. Would you like Ms. Glover to add anything to this or just bring her along for?
She's not here.
Hmm?
She's not here. Ms. Glover is online. She's our chief financial examiner, and she would be happy to answer any questions. The other division representative who's here, Sarah McNair Grove, who's our actuary.
I had the position right, not the face.
That's right. You had the position right. And she would like not to say anything.
I did recognize her, though.
Good job.
Any questions? The first one is Representative Newman and then Representative Gardner, and I'd like to acknowledge that we've got Representative Ledoux with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hall, I might do assume if I were just to look at this bill, just overall what it does, is it just helps ensure that companies that are working in Alaska, and then I guess my understanding of insurance companies is we all pay into insurance companies. They use that money, they invest that money, they make profits on that money to ensure that they have, it helps ensure that they have a fund large enough to pay for any claims that are paid in Alaska. This assures that a company that's coming to Alaska has the ability to pay claims. I mean, that, it helps ensure that. That's the reason for this bill.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, yes, this bill focuses on solvency oversight. I mean, that is our first mission, is to make sure that insurance companies have the money to pay a claim when a claim is filed, and that really is the whole point of financial oversight, and it's to look at the financial condition of companies, and this part deals with the annual audited statements. We also do statutory examinations every 3 years of those companies that we're the primary regulator for. These standards keep us in line with the rest of the company and our financial requirements of insurers who come here to do business.
A couple follow-ups, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hall, I could see where insurance companies might say the state of Alaska shouldn't be sticking their nose into what we do financially. But is this information available to the public elsewhere or available through your insurance division?
Financial statements, at least a portion of those, are certainly public records, and you can access an insurance company's financial statements by doing a public records request with our office. Some of that is electronic. Some of them are paper statements, but they are filed electronically today with a national association, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. So financial statements do become public documents.
Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
Madam, or Ms. Hall, and I have two more questions.
Sure. To that point,
go ahead, please.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I would like to direct your question to Director Hall. Have we ever had occasion in this state where we have an insurance carrier fail to meet this fiduciary obligation?
Through the chair, I'm...
Such as Freeman, maybe, or one of those other carriers that was here for workman's comp?
Oh, we have not, to my knowledge. Oh, no, I take that back. We do. We had an insurance company that was declared insolvent. Ms. Glover, give me the year, 94?
If we're talking about the property casualty company, it was, I believe it was 88 or 89.
I was talking about Leica.
Oh, Leica was 98.
Okay, 98. That was a life insurance company. We had a property casualty company. I want to say Cigna, but that wasn't. Official name, Gloria?
It was Pacific Marine Insurance Company of Alaska.
Pacmar,
yep. That was in 1988. So we have had domestic companies become insolvent. More recently, we have felt the effects of insolvencies of companies whose primary regulators were in other states. Workers' compensation, specifically Fremont, was under the domestic regulation of California, and Reliance under the domestic regulation of Pennsylvania. So it is not unheard of to have insolvent companies. We'd like to think that doesn't happen, but it does.
Which is another one of the purposes for this bill.
Correct.
Thank you, ma'am.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hall, when I'm looking on page 3, lines 7 through 10, it talks about custodian of insured assets, and you stated that they have to be a bank. And that kind of hit me. Is that to insure against, you know, I guess I've heard of these overseas companies or people putting money into banks, into the Caribbean or whatever, that
Now, we have to actually approve the financial institutions that are used for deposits. There also are very specific types of instruments that money can be deposited in, and we address that in regulation, not in actually in statute, although the authority is in statute. But now we monitor closely the types of entities that assets are kept in and the types of assets that can be held. Insurance companies don't invest money in junk bonds, for example, or penny stocks or those types of things. There's a list of specific types of investments that can be used. Generally, bonds are the largest class of assets that insurers keep. The National Association of Insurance Commissioners also has a securities valuation office that we can send securities to for evaluation in New York, and they evaluate various securities.
And on page 4, lines 21, Mr. Chair, Ms. Hall, it says for insurance and freight distributions, you changed the word and to or. Is that, I'm assuming that you're trying to make things more flexible for insurance companies to work with this?
This is a definition of a type of insurance, and leaving the and in there sometimes can be read to mean that it has to be all of these things to be considered, and it's an awkward term, wet marine. There's inland marine insurance and there's wet marine insurance, and I won't go into all of that, but wet marine basically are things that are transported on water, and all four of these categories are separate categories. So by putting the and there, we don't want there to be any misunderstanding that it has to be all four of these to be considered wet marine insurance.
Last question, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hall, on page 5, line 3, or 12 and 13, talks about establishing a legal entity, the Alaska Life and Health Insurance Gratuity Association. And it says each member insurer. Is that mandatory for all insurance companies in Alaska?
This particular Life and Health Guarantee Association is mandatory for all life and health insurance companies. There is a separate guarantee association for property and casualty insurance companies, and yes, they must participate in that guarantee association. That is the backstop for insolvent insurers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I just want to clarify my understanding that what the bill does is require this new report annually, and everything else is just clarifications or putting in statute things that are already happening under regulation. Is that sort of correct? It's not changing the actual behaviors that we currently have except for the annual report?
Through the chair. Now, we already require the annual audit.
Even that.
The new thing in this bill, and there is a new thing in there, I want to make sure you understand, there is a new thing that we don't currently require, and that is that an insurance company have an internal audit committee.
Okay.
And it's our intent with the adoption of particularly Section 2 to then adopt, and I can show you why we didn't put it in statute. This is the model regulation that has the details, but it too is something we intend to adopt as it came from the national regulatory group that promulgates and adopts model regulations.
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
On page 5, section 8, line 13 and 14, why was the language changed to from an insurer that issues an insurance policy described, et cetera, to each member insurer?
It changes who has to pay the administrative assessment. What we're saying when we do that instead of only assessing for the administrative cost of having a guarantee fund, instead of only assessing an insurance company who issues a policy, we want to make sure that each company, each insurer that writes business in our state pays part of the administrative cost to have a guarantee fund. If they don't issue a policy, they won't pay an insolvency assessment, but they will still pay, and as I indicated, that's up to $250 for the administration